and welcome to From the Rookery End. We're not going anywhere quite yet. The season has finished, but we're not going anywhere quite yet because, well, we're going to talk about a big event that is on the horizon, a meeting with Mr. Gino Pozzo with a lot of Watford fans. My name is John, as always. This evening is Mike.
My name is John, as always. That sort of immediately makes me feel a bit suspicious that you might be thinking about changing your name or something, John.
I always wanted the idea. When I changed job once, and I thought maybe I could change my name to Johnny. And everyone likes Johnny and Johnny Fun. But no, it He's never Johnny. Happened. No one could go, no, you're not a Johnny. No, sorry, you're just John. So I didn't get to change that. Also, is Lionel Burney's with us?
Hello, chaps. I don't know what you do with Lionel. It doesn't really shorten. There's no variations. Just kind of stuck with it, really. And I think it gives people a certain impression of who I am before they meet me. Routinely sort of 40 years older than I am, which puts me in my late 80s now, unfortunately.
Well, I used to the other day, I don't know why, I didn't realise it until someone said to me, I always refer to Mike as Michael on the podcast, like I'm his dad or something. I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm going to try and do that a bit less.
Well, you keep me in line. I think, speaking of Lionel, my mum went to a Q&A with Lionel Shriver, who is obviously a female author, and she wrote, "We need to talk about Kevin," I think the book's called. It's quite a powerful piece of fiction. Anyway, mum sort of, they went to this Q&A and was really excited about meeting Lionel Shriver and sort of getting inside their head, and got an opportunity to ask questions. So how did you come up with this incredible book? And the author looked at mum square in the face and went, "Well, I made it up," which mum felt was a hugely valuable insight into the creative and writing process.
The real question is, has Gino Pozzo been making it up as the owner of Watford Football Club for the last few years? Hopefully we'll find out. On the 15th of June, that's a Thursday in the evening, about 80 or so Watford fans are going to get a chance to go to the Watford training ground to sit in front of Scott Duxbury and Gino Pozzo and to ask them some questions about what is going on. And that's what we want to talk in this podcast basically about. We want to have a chat about what we think should be coming up, what people should be asking Gino and Scott. Have you had a good break though, Michael? I know it's only been like 10 days, but have you had a time off Watford?
I have. I have managed to be out of the country when our friends up the road were playing in their playoff final. So that sort of, I managed to swerve that. And then the weekend of I think it's the 7th and 8th of June, I'm off to Download Festival, which are, for older listeners, is Monsters of Rock at Donington Festival. And if that doesn't blow away the cobwebs any lingering cobwebs after this shocking season, then nothing will. So, yeah, to be honest, I'm doing an all right job of parking Watford for a little bit.
Yeah, you're doing your best there, sounds of it. Lionel, you've had a bit of a distraction with the Giro, haven't you?
Yeah, my day job is cycling. The Giro d'Italia is the second biggest race in the world. But I've not had a break from Watford, to be perfectly honest. I've put myself through the whole lot. I watched the whole of the playoff final, extra time and penalties and everything. Oh, man. I mean, I just feel the symmetry of the last decade and a bit. You know, we finished 11th in the championship under Sean Dyche in 2012, and then they stayed up. Everton, I mean, our childhood trauma from the FA Cup final in 1984. Doucouré scores the winner, deflected, of course, with one of his left feet. I mean, it couldn't have been a worse end to the season for us, really, could it? And then here we are. It feels like we've kind of gone everywhere and nowhere all at once because we finished 11th in the championship again, 11 years on. Yesterday, we're speaking on Thursday, the 1st of June. Yesterday was the 24th anniversary of the playoff final win over Bolton at Wembley. You did your excellent episode on the decade anniversary of the Deeney goal. There's a range of Deeney goal merchandise in the Hornet shop, and it just feels like the club is embracing its history and heritage again and, you know, selling our moments back to us. And that's what happens when things are perhaps not going quite so well in the present. We all look backwards, don't we, and enjoy our finest moments. The fact that Luton Town are enjoying their finest moment at the moment is, well, it's difficult to take, isn't it? It really is. Oh.
It isn't going to be fun when they're going to be the media darlings come mid-August. But we got something to get ourselves focused on in terms of Watford, Mike. There's going to be an event at, as I said, the early one on the 15th of June. You know, we've talked about speaking to Gino forever since he's been the owner. I'm sure on many occasions we've asked the club, any chance with a chat? But of course it was never possible because he'd have to speak to Sky Sports first, of course, when we were in the Premier League and there were other people ahead of us. But now he is going to have his first open conversation with fans, him and Scott Duxbury. You've always been quite critical of the idea of this, about talking to Gino, almost like second-guessing all his answers. How are you, now it's actually about to be in front of us, how are you feeling about this event?
I'm not sure if the two are different, but I think less critical, more cynical. I understand, and I think it will be valuable and interesting for supporters to see the whites of Gino's eyes, and for most people to actually hear him speak, to hear what he sounds like. There is a great deal of interest around hearing from Gino Pozzo on a number of levels. But the reason I've been relatively sort of sanguine and cynical about this sort of push to speak to him is exactly as you say, John. I think we can probably guess what he's going to say. As the sort of de facto head, if you like, of Watford Football Club, he is going to say that everything he does is designed to drive Watford forward. He still wants the best for Watford as much now as he did when he rode in with his dad 10 years ago. All the transfers are done with a bit of putting a team out on the pitch that can be competitive with that, while still maintaining the financial integrity of the club, yada, yada, yada. And it's the same with any sort of figurehead or owner or even manager of a football club, apart from in very, very rare circumstances or exceptional situations, you can probably second guess what these people are going to say. And I don't think that's necessarily any different with this event, but that's not to belittle it, because I think it has been too long. I think it'll be interesting. I think Watford supporters, as Lionel has alluded to there, are worried about the future. There's a lot of looking back at the moment, but the reason we're doing that is because the future is looking increasingly less rosy. So I think from supporters who are engaged with the club, supporters who have it running through their veins, who care about the club, they feel like it's an itch that needs to be scratched to put him on the spot and to ask him some potentially difficult questions. I do think we'll probably see the straightest of straight bats from him, but I think it's important and I think it's valuable and I'm looking forward to it.
Lionel, you know, you are, as you said, a journalist and you worked in cycling, which has had many big, huge stories in it, and you've had to cover them. You know, when you do and you speak to these people who are in the middle of a big story and, you know, not in the best position of their lives, do you think you ever have a good, constructive conversation with them? And do you need to do things differently to make sure you get something from them?
Cycling has had a real difficult history with doping. There's been a number of interviews that I've done over the years about the subject of doping with people who have either been, you know, square in the middle of some kind of scandal or on the fringes of one. And, I mean, journalism is kind of fundamental to the process of finding out what is actually going on at the heart of an issue. And I think that's really where, when I sort of analyse the relationship between Gino Pozzo and the supporters, the kind of absence of journalism is one of the factors that has led us to the position we're in now, because he hasn't really had any profile, any kind of regular contact with the supporters. He hasn't been interviewed really at all since he took over the club 11 years ago. And I think that there is something valuable in sitting down with somebody and asking them some questions with an open mind, with some sort of strategy behind those questions. So what is it you're trying to find out and why? And on what basis do you feel you have the right to know? And, you know, our right to know is as supporters. We are all invested in Watford Football Club emotionally. We, you know, without being too grand about it, the supporters are the lifeblood of the club. It's the reason the club exists. And I feel that over the last 10 years, you know, there's been phases in this relationship. At the start, there was kind of scepticism and a little bit of concern, perhaps, about this model that was imposed on us, the player trading model, the joint club model, the worldwide scouting network model. You know, Udinese, Granada and Watford as sort of three clubs in a family. But it worked, and it got Watford to the Premier League. Not immediately, but it got Watford to the Premier League, and then crucially kept them there. And the model shifted slightly. What we've never really had from Gino Pozzo is any opportunity to hear from him how that strategy has evolved and changed over the time, because it does now appear very, very different to how it started out. And unfortunately, without having had any opportunity to hear from him, it's very easy to fill in the gaps, isn't it, and jump to conclusions, but certainly draw assumptions about how the club has got to the point that it's got to. In terms of talking to somebody in a position of power and responsibility, it can be quite intimidating. Like I say, it requires a lot of preparation, a lot of thought about, you know, what might the response to question one be and where might that lead us. You don't want to go into something like this with the intention of antagonizing, but asking tough questions can be difficult. And I don't really envy the people that are going to actually go into the room and put the questions to Pozzo and Duxbury, simply because there are probably 20,000 different agendas out here who won't be in the room, who will be kind of judging and assessing and weighing up not just the answers that are given, but the questions that are asked in the first place. But I do think that the process has some merit, if nothing else, to put a human face on Gino Pozzo and his relationship with Watford Football Club. I think really it's something that they should have done a lot earlier, if not at the very beginning. And when I look back and think about how quiet they were when they took over, it's quite strange to me. They didn't really come in with a fanfare. They weren't really questioned particularly about how things were going to go. We just sort of sat back. Maybe we were so scarred by the sort of Bassini circus that pretty much anything would be an improvement. And of course it was an improvement. The thing about the relationship between football club owners and supporters is that credit is banked, but credit very quickly gets worn out and or spent. And I think the credit has been spent over the last 3 or 4 years. And the silence is the thing that I think is starting to wind people up. And I also think that football club executives, and I don't want to be too critical here of Scott Duxbury, but they live in this sort of strange world where all the mistakes were made in the past and there can be absolutely no suggestion that any mistakes are being made in the present. And I just don't think that that's a particularly healthy way to exist. It's clear that mistakes are made in the present, otherwise they wouldn't be mistakes, would they?
Lionel, can I ask you something? Just putting you on the spot a little bit. With hindsight and looking back at the Pozzo decade, if you like, do you think the fact that they have been so quiet, and it's interesting that you mention it now, that when they did, it was a, you know, there was a piece on the website that the Pozzos have taken over Watford, and that was kind of it, wasn't it? Everything sort of started happening very, very quickly, and everyone was kind of swept up in it and bamboozled, I guess, one way or the other, with all the loans coming in. Dyche was sacked, Zola came in. It was an absolute sort of maelstrom of activity, wasn't it? But do you think the fact that we've heard so little from them throughout the piece is any way potentially like a red flag?
I don't know about a red flag. I mean, I think as supporters, we judge what we see on the pitch first and foremost, and then we judge what else goes on around us. And what we saw on the pitch in that first season was good, wasn't it? It was exciting. Yes, it got off to a rocky start and it was quite difficult to identify with all these new players. And we had the kind of mocking of other team supporters. You know, I mean, the jokes about, you know, what's going to happen when all the loan players go back to their parent clubs, so we'll be left with nothing. Those things did end up being unfounded. The improvements off the pitch definitely banked a lot of credit, I think, because it felt like the club was being improved, not just in terms of the team we were watching. The fact that the Zola team was fun to watch went an awful long way and certainly steered us through the following season where it all unravelled a little bit, and the 3-0 defeat at home to Yeovil, and then you know, it was pretty turgid for a time. Then the sort of the first amber flag for me was the circus of managers in the promotion season. But of course, because it worked on the pitch, the questions were just kept at bay, weren't they? And while a football team is successful, really these questions aren't at the forefront of anyone's mind. But I think there were some amber flags in terms of, you know, some strange transfers that have happened over the years. I mean, Dodi Lukebakio, Sven Kums. I mean, what were these deals about? We don't know. There was no real bid to find out what the trading model was all about. There was the headline deals, watching good players do well for Watford. That was what we focused on, and we kind of ignored maybe what was going on out the back in the warehouse of the Pozzo operation. You know, it wasn't really necessary to question what else was going on because the team was doing well. I think where it's all started to unravel and where there are more questions from supporters, and understandably so, and I'm one of them, is that basically it's stopped working and the model has shifted from the family of clubs to you know, an individual agent, Moggy Bayat. And there's just been no transparency about that relationship. There's been no transparency about what it is that the football club exists for. Obviously exists to try and operate at the highest level. But now that we've just kind of trodden water through a pretty terrible season in the Championship, and this isn't just a sort of an entitlement speaking here, this is the sense that we no longer have a team that you can really look at and say, well, yes, that represents us unquestionably. Win, draw or lose, we can be proud of the team. I just don't feel like that element of it exists at the moment, and I think that's where the questions have come from. And it's crept up on us, hasn't it? I don't think there's any one defining event. I think that the last 3 or 4 years has just been a slow unravelling, and it's reached a point where even Gino Pozzo and Scott Duxbury realise that the questions are not going to go away. A bad start to next season will only amplify things. And I mean, the atmosphere at Vicarage Road at the back end of last season was not particularly pleasant, was it? Perhaps they now realise that they do have to front up and answer some questions from the supporters.
Well, they seem to be prepared to. The answer is what actually comes out of their mouths, and how we feel about those answers will only be seen in the next week or so. What we're going to do is we'll talk through the six different areas that came up in the questionnaire that we sort of put out. As you may know, ourselves, Do Not Scratch Your Eyes, the Watford Supporters Trust, a lot of other sort of concerned fans, active fans, sort of started to gather together when the club threw down the challenge to organise ourselves and to say that they will allow us to speak to Scott and Gino at some point in the summer. Last week, we found out that's going to be the 15th of June. But there's these different areas that we've asked fans to ask questions about. Get a bit of guidance just so we make sure we get depth of questions. The first one, Lionel, is about the appointment of head coaches. And it is, you know, recent news, Luton's promotion with the head coach we started this season with. Is this going to make all... It's going to be very much at the forefront of many fans' minds. I can imagine that they'll say, well, we'd like to congratulate Rob and for what he's achieved, and we're so glad he's gone on to other things. But we're so excited about Valerian turning up, and this season's going to be even better, possibly. What do you think you want to get out of these questions about the head coach appointments?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, this, isn't it? Because obviously the head coach is supposed to be the person that sets the tone, puts the team on the pitch, trains the players, identifies the players perhaps, builds the squad that he wants. And I don't get a sense that really that is the head coach role at Watford. So my starting point would be asking them to define what it is that they want their head coach to do. Because the number of changes we've had over the last 2 years suggests that they don't really know. Because, you know, they've gone through a range of different people. They've gone from experienced, you know, uber veterans to up-and-coming young coaches to, you know, attacking supposedly, you know, free-flowing football to kind of Mr. Dower. I mean, you know, it has kind of gone from one extreme to the other. And I think it would be helpful to hear them define what it is that they ask the head coach to do and start from that point. Because are we in for another season of three coaches, or is the new coach the one? The preposterous thing is that this time last year, more or less, Rob Edwards was appointed. You know, they were going to support him come hell or high water, and it lasted 10 games. I mean, that deserves some scrutiny. They deserve to be asked about that, really, and they really should answer why they changed their minds. Whose idea was it to appoint him in the first place? Whose idea was it to throw the whole club's weight behind Rob Edwards and say, we're going to stick with him for the long term? And then why did that change after a matter of weeks? That, to me, is the important thing, the fundamental of what the head coach is for. Because at the moment, the identity of the head coach is really a sort of secondary or even third issue on the list, isn't it?
Yeah, because the thing that's worrying is, in the early days when the head coach turnover was high, I think it was Scott that sort of tried to describe it as being a model that was actually quite stable, because it meant that the head coach could be interchangeable, because there'd be a decent squad there with a style of play or that was performing at a certain level, that any head coach could come in off a conveyor belt almost and take up where the last one had left off. And the implication was that they were aware they were going to lose managers because they were successful, which on one hand kind of makes sense. And I guess Marco Silva is closest that we've come to actually being the closest one that's actually left of his own volition, because he was, you know, Watford were playing some really, really nice stuff under them. And at that point, that first, was it even a half, third of that season, it did actually start to feel like Watford had arrived in the Premier League a little bit, didn't it? We were playing genuinely exciting football with genuinely exciting players, troubling people in the top echelons of the division, albeit briefly as it turned out. But that initial statement was that any head coach can come in and take over because the club and the team will be stable. And now what's happened since then is the exact opposite. The head coach is being dispensed with because the team is anything but stable. And what's interesting to me is I put a thread on Twitter and Rob Edwards is obviously the headline. But I don't think him being sacked is the real issue. It's all a symptom of the wider issue. Rob Edwards would have had the same problems that Slaven Bilic and Chris Wilder subsequently had, and did experience the same problems that Claudio Ranieri and Roy Hodgson had. You know, Roy Hodgson got pelters for his performance at Watford, yet has kept Crystal Palace up, who were misfiring, who looked for all intents and purposes, looked like they were nosediving towards the Championship. He kept them up at a stroke. And it all feeds into the fact that these managers, these head coaches, whoever they are, whatever the background, like you listed them, Lionel, young, old, attacking, personable, disciplinarian, doesn't matter who comes in, because the team is such a mess, in effect. So they've lost, to me, it feels like they've lost sight of what that initial strategy was straight away. And I think the hiring and firing of head coaches shows that. And I think it's a good way to couch the question, is that, you know, what actually is the strategy? If you're having to hire and fire the head coach, you're getting two things wrong. A, the head coach in the first place, or B, the makeup of the squad, or C, both. But both, all of those requirements land on the hierarchy's in tray, don't they?
It's not just the head coach, though, is it, Mike? It's the whole of their backroom team. You know, they're the people who support them being swept out. It's all very well saying that the idea is to have one unifying, defining culture that is Watford Football Club, but then you change the key half a dozen people that prepare the squad for a match day. I mean, those two statements don't really go together, and I'd like to know how they justify them going together, really, or whether the approach has actually changed over the past couple of years, because it does appear to have changed. I mean, they might as well have been playing darts blindfolded the last two seasons.
For me, the most important thing in that, you also want to see them show some sort of reflection to show that they've learnt something. You know, hopefully they learned something last year. Something might have gone wrong with Rob. Then everybody else was just sort of trying to hide the cracks. Was this appointment of Valerian, you know, Ismail, have they learned anything from the other appointments to make note, for them to know that this is going to be a better one. So some sort of reflections is important for me. You know, we sort of touched on a little bit there, Michael, and a bit early on, the player recruitment also. This seems to have changed to an extent, but the one thing, Lionel's already brought him up, this seems to be the part where Mr. Moggy Byatt and who he is and his role is got to come up in this player recruitment section.
In terms of player recruitment, the pool of players has become incrementally worse, hasn't it? That's just as a base level. They haven't bought the players required to be competitive, first and foremost, when we went back up into the Premier League. Well, first to keep us into the Premier League, then to keep us in it when we stayed up, and then to return us last season. So even without all the questionable or big question marks that hang over the transfer business, the personnel have been nowhere near good enough. And then when you throw into it all this sort of slightly questionable and, I think it's fair to say, concerning business, you know, if you pop that chap's name into Google, the search results will skew either positively or negatively. We know which way they're going to skew. There are huge question marks over why a club like Watford is paying so much money in agents' fees. Why is that? Why one particular agent is being used so frequently in terms of Watford's business, especially against the backdrop of his ongoing challenges. So, absolutely, I think it's a question that needs to be raised on a whole number of levels. One, because you know Watford is a club with a reputation that we're all proud of, or certainly have been up until a certain point. Do we want to be dealing with people who are in the news for the wrong reason? But obviously, it goes much, much deeper than that. And one day, the Pozzos will leave Watford Football Club. And what we hope and pray is that when they do so, the club is left in a financially stable situation so that there is a club for the next generation of podcasters to talk about and YouTubers to talk about and enjoy. But if you're dealing with people who are questionable, then that brings that into doubt, doesn't it? So I think if it didn't come up, I'd be very, very disappointed and very, very surprised. I think it's a question that simply has to be asked.
It could be the most animated we see of Gino, Lionel. This is what we've come to know, at least, that is his favourite thing to do, to find these rough diamonds, to shine them up and to sell them on. It's his thing that he's been doing since, well, his whole adult life, as far as I'm aware.
I just wanted to sort of jump in there because you asked a bit about the approach to the forum and how to pose the most effective questions to Gino Pozzo and Scott Duxbury. My approach would be to narrow down the list of subjects to literally three and really go deep on three subjects rather than, I mean, I gather there have been, you know, 1,000 questions. A lot of them will overlap, of course. Supporters will no doubt be very interested in all manner of things, you know, whether Troy Deeney's coming back or, you know, the choice of real ales in the upper Graham Taylor stand. I mean, that's a particular interest of mine. But I think for the purposes of this forum, really the most constructive thing would be to narrow the focus down to the tightest possible brief. And the relationship with Moggy Byatt would be one of the most important if I were involved, because he's under criminal investigation in France and I think in Belgium as well. I would like to know who he is, how he came to be associated with Watford Football Club, what his role is, who he represents, what money he gets. I would like to really drill down into the detail of that, because I think it's fundamentally important, actually, to know. The problem is that we sort of, when the player trading kind of model came along, as long as the ones that were on the pitch were good, the ones that never saw the light of day or signed for 15 minutes and then were sent out on loan or went off somewhere else, we kind of turned a blind eye to that and it didn't really matter. But obviously it's part of the business model of the club and it's a part of a business model that has run up an awful lot of external debt. And I think it's really important to actually ask the people that run and the person that owns the club, what on earth all of that is about. Now, they may not give any detail. They may play a very straight bat. But that doesn't mean that the question shouldn't be asked and that the responses on the record will tell us something. They might not tell us anything about the full detail. They might not go into, they will cite all kinds of, things, I'm sure, and probably rightly so. You know, they don't want to give away the whole of their modus operandi. But I do think as supporters, we do have a right to ask the question and then judge the answer. And Moggy Baier and his relationship with Watford Football Club has been clearly quite important over the last few years, and it's not particularly one that shows the club in a great light, and I think we should know a bit more about it. And the only people that are in a position to really answer the question are Gino Pozzo and Scott Duxbury, and I think that they should do.
And yeah, we are sort of leaning towards the third sort of area, which is the management structure. If we can find more about this, it will almost feel like we learn a little bit more about the inner workings of the club, why it's lost its way, and I don't like it, but who is responsible for it? I know we live in a culture where it's always about trying to find someone to blame, but knowing who does what and where their roles are, that helps us understand why it's gone wrong and how it can hopefully get better. We've talked about the defining the head coach. You know, I've always gone down the road of knowing what Scott does. CEO, that's a common phrase, and we know that's about running the business. Chairman is a role which you chair some meetings. It should also be the role where you are sort of the overarching guiding figure for the club. But that's where Gino comes into it, who isn't a named director of Watford Football Club, but clearly is trying to be this defining person. And I really want to know where he sees himself in this structure of Watford Football Club, how someone like Moggy Baier in the player recruitment works. More importantly, he's hired someone in the last year, Ben Manger, and lots of people around his team. Why was that done? What's the point of that change? How has the player recruitment changed to need someone like that? Because the system and what we first knew 10 years ago seems to have disappeared a little bit.
I think you're right to mention, John, that it looks like Gino Pozzo isn't a director. He doesn't have that title. And with that, or with the lack of it, doesn't come necessarily the responsibility that a director of a company has. So whether that's an issue or not, whether it's some sort of easily explainable situation where it's not appropriate for him to be named as a director, I'm not sure. But when you're a director, you have certain duties and responsibilities to that company. If he's not a director, so does he not have those? And is that something that is vaguely concerning? I mean, what's his role? But ultimately, we know what Gino's role is. It's his train set and it's his way or the highway. He is the big boss man. He moves the chess pieces around. He decides who goes where. He decides who he gets to tell him what. He ultimately wields the axe. He ultimately, it might not be his hand on the pen, but he's agreeing on the contract and the deal. That's what you'd assume. So there's a question mark over his fiduciary, I guess, responsibilities to the football club, which may or may not be relevant. But then, of course, you mentioned Scott there, like sort of a given what he does. And I guess to a degree it is. But we haven't really heard from Scott since the Rob Edwards debacle. Understandably so, if you are Scott, who I felt was effectively chucked under the bus in that situation. You've got Scott Duxbury, a senior member of the staff. You've got Ben Manger and his staff, Helena Costa. And that is a relatively sort of chunky and senior team. We've seen Ben Manger's name attached to increasing amounts of statements. So that's showing him in a particular light in terms of seniority within the structure. And then, of course, there's been the story that Adam broke in the Athletic just after Luton secured promotion, was that it sounds like Cristiano Giretta has got an extra 3-year contract, which Watford have been unable to confirm or deny. So they're three pretty hefty characters, four if you count Helena Costa. What are they all doing? How do they fit together? What is that working relationship like? And there's Moggy Baier in there as well. So there is a lot of cooks in that kitchen. Personally, I take a lot of persuading that is the dream team in terms of delivering a football club on an even keel with a strategy that everyone is comfortable with and is shoulder to shoulder working behind. It feels like a real hodgepodge of characters with potentially fingers in different pies, whether there's, you know, I don't know. You know what it's like in any working environment. People get on in different ways. People have alliances. People have allegiances. People have loyalty. It feels very, very complicated and uncertain to me. So I'd like to get to the bottom of, you know, what they're doing, what their role is. And as Lionel has been saying throughout, as supporters, we don't have a right to know everything. They may well not be in a position to answer that. And that may well not be appropriate for them. But as a supporter, I'm just looking at that thinking, am I confident that that's the sort of, you know, in inverted commas, the board that is guiding our football club? They feel like a disparate and vaguely sort of odd bunch of characters, really.
The thing is, Mike, we kind of let all of this stuff go until it's too late. Yeah. I mean, the history of football is littered with stories of clubs in all levels of football where all of a sudden their supporters are marching to the ground with, you know, the club badge on a coffin, these kind of dramatic protests against the owners. And as wider football supporters, we're sometimes slightly mystified. It's like, well, what's gone on here? You know, Portsmouth, Bolton, you know, there's loads of clubs over the last 20, 30 years where you think, well, how did that happen? And I'm not saying that we're on the cusp of anything like that happening, but, you know, football is cyclical. We had the up, we are clearly on a bit of a down, and that down needs to be arrested. The down needs to be arrested by the people who are currently in charge. And I suppose, you know, there's no real interest in the machinations and the layers of ownership companies, the layers of management, until suddenly there is. And when there is, it's because something's gone wrong. And I think it's important for the people at the football club to recognise that. You know, if you put Gino Pozzo's name into company's house, he doesn't show up anywhere. He's invisible. If you want to find out the kind of ownership structure of Watford Football Club, you have to do a bit of homework. You have to look at the sort of network of companies, join the dots, work out the links between individuals, which I know some good journalists have been doing. I just think that we reach a point, don't we, of football supporters, where it's always the on-pitch performances, the kind of the worry that external debt has risen to an unsustainable level, that starts to bring back the bad memories of, like, are we going down a slightly darker path here or not? And I think that's the cause and the reason for the uncertainty and the disquiet among a sizable chunk of supporters. And I think that's what is behind the push to actually see, as you said it, Mike, earlier, the whites of Gino Pozzo's eyes.
Finances, as we've started to hint at there, is of course the worrying, most worrying thing if we know that things aren't going well. Because we had a chat with our friend Kieran Maguire from the Price of Football podcast. In fact, he tweeted today, Watford, who haven't borrowed any money since, checks notes, February, borrow some more money, this time from Close Brothers. You know, this is a big thing, Mike, but it feels like, or possibly could be on the night, in a room full of 80 people who can all turn around and leave the room and message their friends. This is the stuff where they're not really going to be able to share too much because of commercial sensitivity. You know, these books that we've been looking at, they are a year old because that's the way the system is. It feels like this worry that we have about it is just not going to go away from this evening, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that I'm deeply concerned about the finances. It feels, even if you just look on the face of it, a club that is declining in quality, declining in competitiveness, it's bound to be, there is bound to be financial holes. If you've been used to being in the Premier League and all the money that comes with that, we've sold some of our best players. João Pedro's already gone. We've got very, very limited saleable assets left, permanent rumblings of borrowing money. And again, there may be perfectly straightforward operational reasons for doing that. It might make sense to realise some cash at a decent rate now instead of waiting for it in advance. If you if you're putting that money to good use, I think that money that Kieran Maguire referenced from Close Brothers was apparently used for some sort of facilities renovations or work on some buildings or something. So it may be that it's better value to get that money now and use it. But if you're borrowing a lot of money regularly, that probably, you know, I'm no financial expert, but if you're constantly borrowing money regularly, having had a reasonable stint in the Premier League, having had reasonable return on selling players. That feels like it's a bit of a concern. And I think what is clear is that the debt is large and is getting bigger, is managed by Gino Pozzo or whoever else is involved in that wider company structure. You assume that the debts are being serviced. But how long is that viable? How long are they willing to do that? What other dealings are going on while that is happening? What does it mean to Watford as a viable option for? We've heard a lot of sort of rumours and rumblings about potential investment. What does it mean for potential investors if there's a lot of debt, a big sort of questionable balance sheet? In terms of a takeover, you'd think if someone's got to pay off Gino Pozzo's loans, then they've got to take on this debt. So you've got to be taking on a debt that you're going to be willing to service on the basis that the revenues are going to be flatlining or decreasing. So it feels like we're in a real potentially sticky situation / crossroads with the finances. And I think this summer will tell us a lot in terms of where we're at financially. I mean, I personally can't see us bringing in vast swathes of players, whether they're needed or not. I think Pedro Sarr and perhaps another might fill the gap that is left by not being in the Premier League. But then we're going to need more to reinvest in what is looking like a threadbare squad. But I think Lionel touched on it earlier. The importance is that we do ask these questions, these tricky questions about finances, and we do ask them in such a way that elicits a response that they're not going to go line by line through the balance sheet. They're not going to admit that they're in financial peril. They just won't do that. But what it will mean is that something goes on record that we can refer to. And I think, of course, it's important to say that the hope is with this isn't just a one-off meeting with Gino Pozzo. This is hopefully the first of a ongoing series of meetings between a fan representative group and the club. This should be happening on a much more regular basis. It just so happens that this is the first one and it's getting the headlines because it's Gino Joan Pozzo. But we need to be going back in whether it's 3 months, 4 months, whatever. And then once we've got it on record, you can say, well, you said back in June, this was the situation. What's changed then? And having it on record, even if it, as Lionel said there, even if it isn't headline-making, groundbreaking, providing all the answers we need, it's on record and it's something that we can reference and refer to and continue to hold people to account for as we move forward.
Lionel, what kind of question can you ask about finances? Can you sort of say, I know they're going to say, are we able to service this debt that we have? Do you have to ask them something a bit more clever to get something that we know we're going to get an answer from? Not to catch them out, but clever to make sure we get something.
I mean, there's some really good work on football finances. Kieran Maguire, as you mentioned, but also Swiss Ramble. The problem with football finances or any company finances is they're always sort of 18 months in arrears, aren't they? You're looking at a picture from a little while ago. And so it is quite difficult to get a handle on. I mean, I must admit, my eyes go crossed when I look at any kind of financial breakdown, or you know, even just the words kind of cause me to come out in some kind of rash, you know, amortization and all of this kind of stuff. But if there must be kind of a forensic accountant among the support who would be able to interpret some of this stuff. But I think that the most important thing Mike's saying there, and I've talked about holding to account and transparency and what have you, you know, we're not pointing a finger of blame here. I don't think any supporters are necessarily looking for trouble here. It's just a desire to know a bit more about what is happening to our club. Because, as I said before, no one's Wigan Athletic until they're Wigan Athletic. We all remember the buckets being shaken in the Rookery stand after the ITV digital crisis and the overspending of the early months of the Vialli. What was it? I mean, just a rush of blood to the head, wasn't it? We've all been there before. And I think the numbers that we're looking at when, you know, the likes of the Swiss Ramble or Kieran Maguire tot up the external debt, they are concerning because they're not covered by the sorts of income that a mid-table championship club can expect to get in the door. And that's what I would like to have a bit more clarity on. Things clearly not going to plan. We didn't get back to the Premier League quickly enough. The whole model relies entirely on being in the Premier League. So first things first, what is the plan to try and be a successful football team? But how do you do that with rising debt and fewer resources? And that's a challenge in front of them. And I think that in order to get the supporters on side for that fight, they need to be a bit more open about the difficulties that they're facing, because otherwise the crowd will just dwindle away. We're already seeing it. You know, the core crowd at Watford is not 20,000, is it? We know that. You know, the core crowd when things are going badly on the pitch is considerably less than that. And I think that in order to try to keep as many people on side as possible, a little bit of transparency on some of these matters would not go amiss. And I don't think it's a show of weakness to say, do you know what, we're in a difficult spot and we need to cut our coat according to our cloth. To use another one of my old mum's favourite phrases, at the moment, Watford looks like a club that's robbing Peter to pay Paul, moving money around, paying off these guys here and bringing in some money there, all borrowed, you know, to pay off that here, to borrow some more here and move it round on the hope that we can sell a player for a big amount of money and keep the whole thing rolling forwards. And like I say, a little bit of transparency on some of those issues would not go amiss.
Of all the issues, a little bit of transparency on this would be massive. I think it would be a huge welcome from the fans who are in the room and anyone who can hear about what goes on. So I think that is the most important one.
John, just to finish up on that, it might, and I think Lionel alluded to it there, getting the fans on side, that isn't something that we should skirt over. That is probably the biggest job they've got, I think, at the
moment. Well, I think the most important job they've got to do is they've got to show that they care. I know that's such a fundamental, you know, they care to talk to us. They care that they care about us, because, you know, we've got our mums to do that.
I think there are supporters that, John, that just want to turn up and watch the football. And I think there will always be, and maybe they're the majority, they just want to turn up at 2:30, pint, chat with their mates, cheer and scream, go home. And I think hearing from them is, some people won't be interested in this at all. Some people won't, it won't even register with them. What I think does resonate with supporters is something to get behind. What's the point of it? What's the meaning? Where are we at with this team? Why are we cheering them on? And I think in many ways it might be quite canny, like Lionel suggested, to say that, look, we are in a tough spot. We've had a really, really good sort of 7 years. We're trying to get back to that, but it's going to be difficult and we are trying to pick a path through it. The money is tight. We're going to have to build a squad accordingly. And all of a sudden, that makes Watford a bit more of an underdog. It resets expectations amongst the fan base. So it might mean that the crowds go back down to 12,000, 13,000 quicker than they ordinarily might have done if they don't think they're going to be challenging. But I'd rather have 12,000 in there who are going to be fully behind it and making a racket and getting on with supporting the team than not. And I think at the moment, we need something to believe in. We need something to get behind. And if it's a rallying cry saying, look, actually, we're up against it here. We all need to we need to readdress the situation, but let's do it together. Let's face up to reality together. That actually could be quite powerful. I don't for one minute think they'll do it. But getting supporters back on side, that could work. And just, I think there's still, the expectation level is still high. Because there are still a lot of people have seen nothing but success for the best part of a decade. And that's, why would they expect or settle for anything less? It's perfectly reasonable. So,
Mike, they'll be expecting the money from João Pedro's transfer to be reinvested straight back into the team. And when that doesn't happen, you know, even the supporters who don't care about Macquarie Bank and Close Brothers, they will notice what's on the pitch in front of them. And they will ask the question, well, where's the João Pedro money gone? You know, this is how football works, isn't it? We've lived it successive generations. People have certain expectations based on, you know, the sort of telephone number figures that we all live these days. And I think you're right that, you know, kind of closing the gap between the expectation and the reality is probably the first job for Scott Duxbury, essentially, as the sort of the chief executive, because otherwise it will be an unpleasant start to next season when expectations aren't met. I mean, at the moment, my general sense is that people think that last season was a blip. We've just seen our near neighbours achieve promotion on next to nothing, And we are probably, in balance sheet terms, on less than next to nothing, aren't we? Because, you know, there's so many people in the background being paid, I suspect. You know, the sums of money involved at Watford Football Club will probably, until, you know, maybe a month or so's time, dwarf the sums of money that Luton Town are, you know, talking about. And I think the legacy of 2 or 3 years of, you know, that unravelling success is that it's still being paid for. And I think they need to kind of be honest about that, really. And like you say, that would go an awful long way to just getting the fans back on side and just having people not have the expectation that, you know, just because we sold a player for, what, 30 million, we're going to suddenly invest, you know, 28 million of that in the playing squad, because I suspect we're probably not.
No. I more than suspect. I highly assume that we will not be doing that. There's going to be some NEA business, of course. Some any questions about fan engagement and what, you know, what this thing's going to look like on an ongoing basis. Any AOB questions? What kind of things do you expect to hear in that section, Lionel?
Oh, I mean, it's going to be so interesting, isn't it, to see how this plays out. I mean, I've been to many fans fora in the past. Is that not the correct Latin plural of
forai?
Forai, is it? Oh, I mean, here we
I
are.
Don't know.
The primary
I don't
school
know.
Teacher has the primary school teacher has set me correct there. I've probably got that wrong. Yeah, I'm quite happy to admit I've got that wrong. The old fans forum in the it would have been the bar restaurant in the lower Rouse, as it was then. That would have been where I sat and listened to the various questions about whether or not, you know, certain beer was going to be put on in the bar, or, you know, would exit and egress from the southwest corner be improved over the close season. You know, the sort of the questions would sometimes be quite esoteric, and I do feel like this has all built up to a point where the questions might be the questions are important because they are fundamental to the immediate future of the football club, and it's the first opportunity really for anyone to listen to Gino Pozzo talk about the football club, our football club, that he has owned for over a decade. And I mean, any other business, I would just urge those of you who are narrowing down the questions to have a laser focus on what actually fundamentally matters, which is getting to the bottom of what the model is and how it operates and why it's gone wrong. They are the three areas, I think, that we all want to know the answers to. And, you know, everything else about whether Troy Deeney has a future in the football club, and, you know, whether we're going to have striped shirts or red shorts or whatever, all of that kind of stuff can just go to the back burner, because I do feel like we are on a point in a journey that we can arrest collectively. We can arrest becoming the next Wigan or the next Bolton or Portsmouth and, you know, kind of right the ship a bit. But we are getting to a point where it needs a sort of collective will to do that. And hopefully Gino Pozzo and Scott Duxbury's willingness to meet with the supporters is an indication that they recognise that.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. This, by the way, it is fora.
That literally the one thing I've said in this podcast that's right.
We really hope, though, that, like you said, those are very important questions. And to as Mike sort of points out, to certain football fans and certain Watford fans, getting to the game, being at the game is what is important to them. And the little details are important. But hopefully this is just the first meeting of many, and all those issues can be, on a regular basis, have a dialogue with the club. But maybe they will take a step backwards in this sort of meeting. If you do want to go, you still can apply. It is on Thursday the 15th of June at the club's London Colney Training Ground. You need to get in. It's going to be a random ticket ballot. All you need to do is you need to go to slido.com. That's slido.com. And use the code 8963220. That's 8963220. Mike, it's going to be...
That was the crowd for Birmingham at home, wasn't it?
Mike, are you looking forward to it?
For all the reasons we mentioned at the top, I think it's about time that as supporters, Gino, we talked about us seeing the whites of his eyes. It's about time he saw the whites of ours. We're all committed to Watford Football Club in different ways, whether it's by doing a podcast or whether it is turning up a couple of times a season, whether it's a season ticket, whether it's just going to away games. We're all committed to it. We all give something to it, whether it's time, money, emotion, too much stress. So we have earned this right. We care about the football club. And as the owner, I think it's right that he hears directly from us. And he is asked some difficult questions. And us as supporters are given the opportunity to see how he reacts and what his response is to what hopefully will be some appropriate but tough and searching questions. So Lionel's kind of alluded to it a little bit, that we are at a crossroads. There is definite sort of impending sense of not necessarily doom at this stage, but unless something changes pretty quickly, the slide is, we're looking down instead of up. We know what the pitfalls are. There's countless, a litany of clubs who have fallen into them previously. It's very, very easy for football clubs, certainly ones the size of Watford. We touched on the size of the core fan base. It is small. Watford is a relatively small town and a relatively small supporter base. So the amount of money and attention and revenue it can drive is limited. So for it all go peak tong quickly wouldn't be a massive reach. I think getting there and getting stuff out there in the public, getting stuff on record, getting people to perhaps think and examine a little bit more closely the direction of the football club and what we might be able to affect as supporters, what can our attention, what can that change? Yeah, so I think it's an important first step, and I think people are looking forward to it and are recognising the potential importance of it. So yeah, grateful that the club have found a way to make it happen, and obviously the number of questions and the interest that is generated is really encouraging, because it shows that Watford supporters are, of course, engaged and wanting to get involved and wanting to ask those questions and wanting to hold our owners and senior staff to account.
It is 2 weeks today since we recorded this podcast on Thursday evening. And remember, do get involved if you want to get down there and see the whites of Gino's eyes. And hopefully we'll have some great reaction after it. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Can I just end on a positive note,
James? Go for it.
I just say, I mean, we all enjoyed the journey, didn't we? We all enjoyed uncomplainingly the journey. I mean, getting into the Premier League, staying up without spending a weekend in the bottom three, reaching the FA Cup final, we'll gloss over how that turned out. Yes, we went down, we went back up again, we went down, everyone knows this. It was a roller coaster ride. We know that was funded on the business model that Gino Pozzo and to an extent his father Gianpaolo introduced to the football club. We also know, I think we can genuinely say that there's no one who owns a football club who wants to run it into, £100 million worth of debt. I mean, I'm kind of rounding down the figures there, I think. But, no one intends, I don't think, to run down a football club. It kind of creeps up, doesn't it? And the circumstances of the last 3 years have certainly crept up on Watford. They managed to get themselves out of a bit of a hole, but then, fell straight back into it. I don't think anyone's ungrateful for the journey we've been on, the good times. I just think that in hindsight, we perhaps should have had a bit more dialogue through those good times and shouldn't have allowed those good times to sort of collectively encourage us to take our eye off the ball. I could be completely wrong. Maybe Gino Pozzo's ultimate intention is just to write a cheque for £100 million and clear all of the external debt and everything's fine. But I'd like to hear that from him if that's the case. Otherwise, somebody has to, somebody has to look out for the short and medium term interests for Watford Football Club, and that always falls on the supporters.
We'll look forward to it, Mike. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for putting up with my Well, my nonsense, quite frankly.
We've been put up with Gino for a while. No, I don't mean that at all. We'll be back with another podcast very soon. Thank you very much for listening, and come on, you horns!